Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by Community Radio WERU, 89.9 FM, Blue Hill, and at weru.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. On today's episode, we engage in a deep dive into Maine and its grain. Tristan Noyes, Executive Director of the Maine Grain Alliance, Dusty Dowse, baker and leavening expert, and Richard Roberts, seed saver and heritage grain guru, join me for an episode-long discussion on this very important economic and creative engine of Maine. Welcome to Creative Maine. I have three representatives here of the Maine Grain Alliance, including Tristan Noyes, Dusty Dowse, and Richard Roberts. Welcome, all of you, to Creative Maine. Today, we are going to explore artisan baking in Maine, the industry that culture supports, industries, I should say, that culture supports, such as agriculture, equipment, dining and product retail, and probably most especially education. So, Tristan, you are the executive director of the Maine Grain Alliance. So, would you introduce us to the organization and also to yourself and give us a little of the backstory as to how you arrived at this exalted position?
Well, thank you so much for having us and letting us share our story with your listeners. As you said, I'm Tristan Noyes, the executive director of the Maine Grain Alliance. And our organization is one that's really unique. We have a mission to inspire and empower people who are building local grain economies. And we're doing that by creating connections and sharing grain traditions and innovations from earth to table. And what that means in practice is that we are a really diverse community. We're bakers, we're millers, maltsters, brewers, seed researchers, conservationists, seed savers. We're oven builders even. We're a group that learn from one another, and the power of that sort of cross-pollination of people and place has helped to spur a lot of interesting and new activity in the state of Maine and opportunities in agriculture. We started as a community group in the Skowhegan area 19 years ago, actually, gathering around a kitchen table to think about ways that we could connect people in Somerset County back to their agricultural roots. And one of the things that was in doing some of that kind of early research and learning was that Somerset County was once a place where a lot of grain was grown. And so that group took it upon themselves to host the very first kneading conference, K-N-E-A-D-I-N-G, in a church parking lot. And to everyone's amazement, from the start, there was this just incredible community of people who are looking to connect around how do we kind of reinvigorate a grain economy that once was one that provided grain for people to use in mills to create stone ground flour that can be made into bread. And we've been really doing that work ever since. A lot of the the lessons learned in those first needing conferences is what came to create the need. The need was shown that we needed to have an organization that could focus on helping to address those questions and kind of relieving those bottlenecks of grain getting to table. So that's how the Maine Grain Alliance was formed.
How did you get to be part of this?
It was very serendipitous. I had been, I grew up in Aroostook County, where as among a group of a family that had grown potatoes on both sides of my family for a long time. My parents had a flower shop and greenhouse, and I grew up growing things and just always loved being part of the farm. I went to school in Maine and then worked and lived in Boston in global education for a while, but wanted to come back and get back to my roots, literally, I guess.
Literally.
My brother and I started an organic farm called Grow Maine Organic Farm. And initially we were growing all kinds of different diverse veggies, a lot of lettuce and leafy greens and selling them throughout the state. But as time went on, we became more and more interested in this like exciting community that we were hearing about around grain. And so my first access to the Maine Grain Alliance was really, I was trying to learn about how our farm could be a farm that could grow grain and be a part of that community. Those, you know, this bread and beer community that seemed to be sort of in its early stages. So it was, that was my first kind of experience. And then at that time, the organization was looking for an executive director. Amber Lamke, who had served as the executive director before me, was transitioning into a full-time role with Maine Grains, which is one of the businesses that was created during this time to help to alleviate some of those bottlenecks. How do we have a processor that can handle grain that's grown within the state and then provide it to the people regionally, not just in Maine, but across the Northeast? And so I had some experiences that lent themselves well to this role, and I've been very happy in it ever since.
Excellent. Well, Dusty Dowse and Richard Roberts, you are also part of this, I've been told, sort of ground floor initiative. So, Dusty, you have a very interesting background in science and science teaching at University of Maine, research. So tell us a little bit about your role in the Maine Grain Alliance and how you came to be involved with it.
Well, initially, it had absolutely nothing to do with science. When I was a kid growing up in Albany, if you went to a German bakery, they were speaking German and so forth. Same with Italian and French bakery. So I grew up with good bread. And then when I left for college, I had nothing but junk. So I decided, you know, I'm going to have to bake myself. And so I began very early. I remember the first thing I ever baked was many years ago. My grandmother was scones, but I began baking on my own. And then a number of years ago, by happenstance, my wife met somebody from Brown University, also walking down the aisles of the Common Ground Fair, and turned out to be Albie Barden. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, and she said, he's a Mason. And I said, so I want to talk to him. And he said, yeah, you want an oven? So I managed to get, I now have my own bakery with a wood-fired oven in it and so forth. And that has nothing to do with science. That's art. But the point is, science underlies everything we do, and it certainly underlies baking.
Oh, and, very much, yeah.
So I decided that one of the things would be to try to get baking education going, and that ranges from people who just want to be able to make a couple of pitas in their home oven, and all the way down to when I started talking about stable isotope analysis, figuring out how people found out when people were eating and growing corn. And, you know, when I talk about flour, I'd start talking about, you know, cysteine residues and so forth. So, you know, I try to keep it reasonable so that I'm talking to the audience in an appropriate way. So yeah, when it comes to just learn how to make pita, like I'll be doing that next weekend at Unity at Farm and Homestead Day at Mofka. And I'll be baking pita. And if somebody wants to bake pita in our humongous Panuel 120 oven, they can do it. They'll have recipes and so forth. And I won't be talking about cysteine residues. So.
Yes, words that are falling off everyone's lips, I'm sure. But yes, that's great because you make it accessible to the layperson, not to go down a rabbit hole, but it's well known that during COVID, everybody decided that a thing to do was to make sourdough. And so there are a lot of lay people who are vitally interested in good baking all of a sudden. So Richard, you too are a teacher. And how did you get involved in all of this?
I've been living out here off the grid since the 1970s and was involved. I'm involved in this intentional community out here. That's what they call it now. I've always been growing things. I taught, but it was really high school English. And it wasn't until I retired and I heard that the grist mill in Skowhegan was opening up. And I went, what the heck is that? And went down and volunteered with Amber Lamke. And that's how I got to know about the grain community. I've been growing other things on my own, but not grain in any quantity. And so that's how I got involved with them.
Now that we're at this point, can you give our listeners a somewhat lay definition of grains and what they are? I know there is some confusion. I taught culinary for many, many years, and students have a great deal of confusion around what is a grain, what is a seed, what is a legume. Are they interchangeable? I know they're botanically different, but give us a little bit of a discussion about that.
A simple way to think about it is there are some scientific definitions, then there's some practical kind of definitions of how we talk about grain, but grain is the edible seed of certain grasses. It's the harvested seed of a grass plant, especially cereal crops. You know, the types of crops that we have here in Maine include oats, barley, wheat, corn, rye, you know, and then we also have a series of things that we also grow that we treat like a grain, but are technically not a grain scientifically, but for all intents and purposes, for how it's used. Well, not all intents and purposes, but for some of the way
many
that it's used.
Purposes,
like
yeah.
Buckwheat, for example, is a pseudo grain. It's actually is part of the rhubarb family. But we, when we harvest it for grain-like purposes, it's treated like a grain. So mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd add to that, Richard?
I think if we think of a seed, is comes from what we think of as a flower. And so this, you know, but we have a flower and then the seed is that. And that would be like you said, like buckwheat, but millet, all these different kinds of things that are really seeds as opposed to grains. I know I couldn't give you the exact scientific definition of it.
How about something like quinoa or other, millet is a good example, things that we cook like grain, but aren't necessarily.
Right. They're more seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But of course, a grain is a seed too. So we'd have to go and get into a biology class to really discover the differences in it.
Yeah. Right. I was going to say that's not confusing.
It's the grass part, right? So grains are grasses, and that's the key part there.
I noticed that one of your lecturers, is that fair to say, is a fellow who started a tofu factory in, is it Rockport? Mm-hmm. Now, clearly, soybeans are not grains, but it's sort of under this umbrella. How does that work?
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, really terrific crops that we grow in the state. And some of them are grown both in rotation with some of our larger cash crops, and some of them grown in rotation with grains. Soybeans, which is what tofu is made out of,
right?
That is a really cool and unique opportunity and a wonderful business. I think you're referring to Heiwa Tofu.
Yes.
And so that is sourcing soybeans, some of which is being sourced from Aroostook County, and it's being grown in conjunction with other grains in rotation. we're always looking for a good farm crop rotation plan, right? And so in the state, a lot of the grain that's grown is grown in rotation with potatoes because we have a lot of potato acreage. And as time has gone on, there has been even greater emphasis on those rotation crops. So there's been less years where there's been potatoes being grown back to back, and a lot more years now where there's potatoes and then a grain and then maybe it's field peas, some kind of legume that's fixing nitrogen into the soil so that we're having, a healthier farm plan overall. Soybeans fit into that in some ways. There's a number of other crops that do as well. But yeah, that's a wonderful business and an example of a really great market opportunity too. He was on the shelves in all kinds of grocery stores and has a wonderful product.
I have tried it, and it is wonderful. We think of the cash crops of Maine as potatoes and blueberries and so forth. So you've just explained a little bit about how creative farming puts these things together with potatoes. So how do they fit? I don't know if the word is statistically into the economy of Maine.
They've become a very big part of the economy of Maine. One of the things that's is unique and sort of has become a transformational opportunity for grain is that our history in growing grain has changed over time. If you were to go back, to the early 1900s or even late 1800s, we had, thousands of mills that kind of dotted the countryside. And, the opportunity to be able to grow grains for local use was right there in your own town at your grist mill. And as time went on and those opportunities left, so did some of the kind of acumen and knowledge around the way to be able to grow grain for those uses as well. If you look at our region, we have about 50,000 acres of potatoes, and we have almost equal numbers of acres of grain because of the rotation now. And so, actually, oats are the most grown grain in the state, followed by barley. And the reason for that historically has been that opportunity to be able to provide for feed markets or into commodities markets has largely been one that has helped to provide the transition back to growing potatoes. But what's transformational in addition to that is that still remains an important market. But as more of that population of grain has gone toward being grown for malt barley for the two malt houses that are in the state, or being grown to be able to be sold to our amazing mills, Aurora Mills and Farm and Lineas and Maine Grains and Skowhegan, or buckwheat that's being grown and milled at Bouchard Family Farms or others too. That then is helping to capture even more value within our kind of grain value chain, and more products are then also able to be utilized. So you see the 175 breweries in Maine, almost all of them are using local malt. You see all of these incredible bakeries that we have, really world-class bakers. Not just in Maine, but all across the Northeast using Maine-grown grain. So it's become a really interesting piece of that puzzle that fits in really nicely with our other agricultural crops, and especially potatoes.
Wow. So Richard, let's go back to the heritage breeds. Where does that fit into some of these puzzle pieces? Is it still very much a niche enthusiasm, or has it grown to be more sustainable agriculture? Where do you see the heritage breeds fitting?
People always have this idea that those grains that were grown 150 years ago are better than the ones today, but we don't really know that. So we started out as this heritage seed restoration project to try to find. We had some old varieties that we've gotten from Seed Savers, but over time we realized that what we really wanted to do was to find varieties that thrive in Maine's climate and then to encourage those rather than just try to keep some little niche things going. There's enough people, little seed savers doing that. We felt that our role would be to become a grow out organization. So we do have seed savers that make like a little handful of seeds available to us, something that they may have gotten 30 or 40 seeds from one of those seed banks and can grow them out on a small scale in their yard. And then people have said to us and said, oh, this one looks good. Will you try to grow it out onto a larger scale? Mm-hmm. So we have some of these varieties from the 1800s. But at the same time, we also have varieties from contacts in Denmark and in Scandinavia, because they have a climate similar to ours. And also, I'm always looking at new varieties that I get from organizations like Albert Lee Seed, who make them available from universities like in North Dakota and in the University of Washington, and try to find the ones that they have and see how they'll grow here.
Okay.
So right now we have about 28, we're growing about 28 different varieties.
Some do you do any selective breeding between, say, the Danish version and a heritage version? Or
I'm not doing any of that, mm-hmm. any of that kind of breeding. I'm just doing the grow out. It's actually very difficult to make a new variety. You have to grow the two plants that you want to make a new variety side by side, one plant, and then you pluck all the male parts off one of them, and then you bag those two together, and then you get one head of this new variety. And then maybe you've got 30 or 40 seeds, and then how many years is it going to take you to grow that out to find out if it was even worthwhile?
Yeah.
Most of the breeding going on is really for disease resistance.
And pest resistance too?
There's always diseases that plants get. And right now there's a variety, the very, very common variety grown in the state of Maine and called Glen. And now they have a replacement for that. So I figure if they've got a replacement, it must be showing signs of some kind of disease. You know, so I've got some of that. It's a Bowles, it's called. I've got some of that growing. And I have another new variety from the University of North Dakota, which is supposed to be a huge producer, but it's very dry out there. So we're trying to see what it's like here, what it'll grow in our climate. But at the same time, we've got about 20 different varieties from the 1800s that we're growing out. And we've made contact with the university, with their food lab, you know, where they have like a dozen kitchens in one place. And when we get enough, we'll mill up all those, and each individual kitchen set would then bake like a muffin using exactly the same recipe, but with a different variety. So then we could do taste tests on these things. So we'd have them, we'd have people like Dusty, who was like an expert in bread. We'd want him involved in that, so he could, you know, give us like a kind of a professional outlook on what crumb is like, what all these different varieties. Why did they stop growing this stuff 150 years ago? We have no idea.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we can posit why they stopped growing it, because of maybe ease of scaling up in, you know, a more factory style farm or whatever. Mm-hmm. But here,
I grew one. It had beautiful big heads. And I thought, oh, this is going to be something. We got a big windstorm and it all blew over. And I went, oh, that's why they stopped growing this stuff. It lodged. It fell over too easily. But see now, because a lot of those older varieties were very tall because they wanted the straw for bedding for their horses. So as soon as you stop getting, you go into kind of mechanized things, you don't need all that straw. So they started breeding the plants shorter. So there's all kinds of reasons why they've done things, and also debates on whether that's the reason that the flower isn't as good as it used to be because we have mechanized it. But I don't worry about that too much. I just try to grow the stuff out.
Very good. Okay, well, I think we're going to take a short break before we get back to some other very interesting topics. Stay tuned. We're going to have our creative main calendar, and then we will be back for more discussion with Tristan, Dusty, and Richard. Thank you. Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. Auditions for Steps, the musical, will be held June 27, 2026, starting at 11:30 a.m. at the Belfast Dance Studio, 109 High Street, Belfast, Maine. Mark your calendar and join them for a thrilling day of creativity, improvisation, and collaborative magic. Then join them for more of that in rehearsal. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to bring your passion for singing and acting with friendly others to the stage. Absolutely everyone is welcome. For more information, email soundbonemedia@gmail.com. Your Bangor Band has begun its 167th season and will be giving free and fun performances every Tuesday in the summer. Tuesday, June 23rd at 6:30 p.m., the band performs at the Bangor Public Library with a rain date of the following evening. Tuesday, June 30th will be at Cascade Park, and Tuesday, July 7th, the band heads to the Bangor waterfront and will combine with Maine's own 195th Army Band. For more information, visit bangorband.org. The Museum of the Orland Historical Society is now open every Saturday for the summer. Come explore the collection of everyday items used by Orlanders from the past century and a half at the Orland Historical Society, 23 Schoolhouse Road in Orland. Open from 1 to 4 every Saturday, your visit will be free and fascinating. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU 89.9 FM and on WERU.org. Now we return to our exploration of all things grain in Maine. Welcome back to Tristan Noyes, Richard Roberts, and Dusty Dowse. We're having a very interesting and penetrating conversation about grains, their place in the Maine economy, and overall picture of agriculture. And now we're going to talk a little bit about the actual uses for the grains and a little bit about this exciting kneading conference that is upcoming. So, we know grains are not only for bread. Brewing is a major use for grains. And Tristan, how many breweries did you say were in Maine?
There are around 175 breweries.
Wow, that's yeah. Wild.
We had only in 2009, I think there were only about 30 breweries. So there has been a huge boon for the craft brewing industry.
Well, I know that Maine's craft brewing industry has it all together, as does the coffee industry, the indie coffee brewers, too. So can you point us to some creative Maine bakers and brewers, perhaps, who are pushing the envelope of the art and craft of baking? What does that look like, and what are these creatives doing?
We are so lucky to live in Maine and to have these incredible incredible artists, really, who are helping to shape these delicious things that we eat and drink. And I could probably take the entirety of the rest of this episode just listing friends and, just people who are doing exceptional things. But, I can try to highlight a few that are unique and in some kind of different areas. And Dusty and Richard can help fill in some of their favorites too. But we are seeing innovation. A lot of what we do is to help to educate both consumers, but also professional bakers, home bakers, on how to use the stone ground flour. We
Right.
are.
And we being, I just want to make this clear now in this half, in case people are just joining us, we is the Maine Grain Alliance.
That's correct. Yeah, our community of people, our organizational nonprofit, but also, that sort of network of community members who are championing this sort of movement of local grains. And so that's done in a variety of different ways. There are educational classes that we'll talk about the Kneading Conference and others, but it's also by educating consumers and by creating delicious things. So, for example, later this month in the Portland area, you can go on the Portland Bread Crawl, which is going to go to whole host of incredible bakeries from the Portland area, walking from the West End down to the East End, Rosemont Market, which uses a ton of local grains in their everyday breads now, Zoo Bakery, who actually won the James Beard Award for Best Bakery in the United States only last year, and Standard Baking, which has been the standard of baking in the Portland area for a long time.
Ooh, come hungry.
I can remember exactly. I remember we're ending the tour at a friend of ours who has also served on our board of directors in the past, and a friend of Dusty, Richard, and I, Carrie Haney, who owns Night Moves Bread in South Portland. And I can remember distinctly, I was at Oxbow Brewing Company. I'm sure probably Richard and Dusty may have even been there. And this was probably about 10 years ago. And there was this baker who was there who was talking about using 100% Maine grown grain in all of her baked goods. And that to me at that time was really kind of revolutionary. And really, yeah, it blew my mind. And that person was Carrie, and she has successfully built this amazing business called Night Moves Bread. So there's tremendous innovation happening with using our stone ground flours from our mills, like Main Grains and Aurora Mills and Farm, but also she has a millstone herself in her bakery that she is using to locally mill small amounts of flour for her uses, and that she's sourcing directly from farms. So that's another piece. And those mills are actually built from a friend who teaches at the Kneading Conference, called New American Stone Mills, Andrew Hine and Blair Marvin from Elmore Mountain Bread in Vermont. You can also look to the kind of incredible, one of my hometown bakery too, that's also in the South Portland area, Scratch Baking Company. They just led a class for us this week, donating their time to teach on corn, which is the northeastern grain, one of the major northeastern grain crops that's been grown here for millennia. And we created four different types of breads: a biscotti, a miche, a Annadamma bread. We made just a whole variety of different things. But it's not just bread. If you look across the state, Brazen Baking Company in Rockport, Jeff and Lisa Deck, they've created incredible crackers in addition to the amazing bread. But they have these flatbread skinnies, which you'll see throughout the state, that are really unique and tasty. Derek DeGeer of Hootenanny Bread, Damascotta, has an incredible array of different grains that he's using with locally grown flours. There are ice cream sandwiches that are being made from grains. Afterglow Ice Cream, Sammy's. There are pasta. Ilma Lopez of Piccolo Pasta, and also Cheval and other Ugly Duckling in Portland too, which is also part of that bread crawl, is using local flours for those pasta dishes. And everybody loves pizza. We have some of the best pizza in the whole world. Maine craft pizza. That's something that we've been helping to kind of ring the bell about a bit, in the sense that there are many organization businesses that are using flour that's stone ground flour grown in Maine, having seasonal ingredients that change depending on the time of year when you're eating your pizza. They're being served alongside Maine craft beer and often being baked in wood-fired ovens that are also being built here in Maine locally. So
after Common Ground Fair last year, I interviewed the fellow who's in the Maine Metalworkers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. He makes some incredible ovens.
Oh, yeah. There's so many talented masons in the state. Maine Wood Heat is based in Skowhegan and makes these amazing, both mobile and stationary works of art. Dusty has one that he bakes out of in Lammestad. You know, there is just innovation everywhere. And that's not even getting to speak yet to the brewing side, which is doing in a lot of others. But I don't want to. One other thing on the pizza, I'll just say that's really unique is that we also have a new business called The Good Crust. And The Good Crust is based out of Canaan. It's using 100% Maine milled flour. And it's creating incredible opportunities in K-12 schools where there's dozens of new grain products that are being ready to bake that are hitting the cafeterias, and students are engaging with it in awesome ways.
So how do they do that? I want to follow that thread for a second, because lunch ladies put out historically and notoriously awful bread. So how do you get the kids to engage with it? Do you have special classes, or how does that work?
Yeah, there's a project I'd encourage everyone to go check out. This is part of a USDA grant, actually, that Heather Kerner of The Good Crust is helping to lead. It's called Good Grains on the Go. And there are two pilot districts, Madawaska and also Topsom, that are helping to kind of serve as a model for replication across other places, not just inside the state, but others. So there's tons of things happening. There's sampling. There's getting evaluations from the students in real life. There's bringing a little hand mill to like have kids interact with the grain, being present, answering questions, understanding what they want, what size they want, what do they want it to look like, taste like, feel like. But we're also creating educational materials that accompany that. We're in the midst of putting out a with Maine Ag in the Classroom, a book that it talks all about good grains for me. We did my son is actually doing this right now, which is super fun, is a grow your own pizza kit. So it looks a little pizza box. It comes with seeds, and you can grow all the things that you want to have a delicious pizza. So,
well, Richard, how long does it take to actually raise a seed of grain to pizza status?
Well, we've done that with some of the kids. To go back to what Tristan was just saying, I just recently took one of those mobile kits to a grade school over in Anson and did a half hour each with the fourth grade, the fifth grade, and the sixth grade. And we had seeds and a grist mill and a small tabletop mill, and they ground up a flour for themselves. And I showed them all. And then we all had some pizza that we had made, that we got the crust in from The Good Crust. And we brought those to the school, and they cooked them up right there for the kids. And each of those classes has their own sourdough going in their classroom, too.
Wow.
We did do one with we gave some seeds to a grade school teacher. They planted them in the yard in the spring. And then when they came back, they watched them come up over that spring. Then they lost track of them in the summer. When they came in the fall, they all went out and they just pulled up the plants and brought them in. And the teacher asked me, well, how are we going to thresh them? And I said, put a tarp down and have the kids jump up and down on them.
Yeah.
And they did that. So then they got the seed, and then they poured it all in front of a fan and got the seed that way.
Separated the wheat from the chaff.
Right.
That's actually, that has some historical implications. I do a program at the Wilson Museum in Castine. They have replicated the beehive oven that was in the Perkins house in the 18th century Perkins house. And we bake penny loaves at open houses and stuff. I'm in charge of that. So this gives me some very interesting ideas about, it wouldn't be a pizza kit, it would be a penny loaf kit, but the same difference, you know. And
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that Dusty does all the time when we go in these different places. He shows that. What Dusty, what are you going to make and be making at Home and Farmstead Days?
Yeah.
Just going to be doing pita, which is easy and it's fun because it blows up like a balloon. And, you know, we haul our big Panyol oven down there and I'll have recipes. And the idea is that if people are interested, I have the recipes will be both in volume and weight. I'll try to convince everybody that I talk to get a little scale and so forth. Yeah. They'll be able to roll out the dough and they'll be able to bake it themselves. Obviously, what you can't do in a workshop like that is start from scratch, where you start with flour, water, salt, and leavening. But it will be, you know, I can speak with people about how to do the rest. And most people have baked at least some bread, and I'll tell them how to bake them in their home ovens as well. So that's a typical kind of workshop. I did something like that down in Standish a couple of, about a month ago, and we did naan. And we baked them in a small open fire, not the big oven, but same idea. Hand out a recipe, and they get to taste the bread, and they say, wow, that's great. And I say, yeah, it's a lot of Maine-grown flour in it.
Do you do the flatbreads because no rising is required? Is that the general idea? Yeah.
It's easy. I mean,
so so it's mechanical leavening, right? Not, it just blows up because of the moisture, not because of.
Oh, no, it's leavened.
It is leavened.
Yeah. And they will always have an overnight pre-ferment, which I always do.
Oh, okay.
Now,
okay.
To begin, you know, when we do at the kneading conference, we have more time. And for instance, I'll be doing leavening there, and we'll do everything from an unleavened chapati. The formula will be actually exactly the same. Same amount of flour, exactly same kind of flour, water, and salt. The only difference will be whether it's leavened. I will do chemical leavening, mm-hmm. direct dough. We'll do an overnight. We do a couple of different overnight fermentations, and then we'll do a sourdough.
Just
when
for the...
actually taste the difference between. Realize that the only difference will be the leavening.
Sure. So. And just for the uninitiated amongst us, so the difference between the different kind of leavenings, so you've got the yeast, which is an organic leavener. You've got chemical leaveners, which is baking powder, baking soda. And then you've got what I call mechanical leavening, which is often steam from one source or another. So,
well, strictly speaking, all bread is leavened because it's leavened by steam. Mm-hmm. You know, chapati is leavened by steam. And so that forms the bubbles.
Right.
See, there's where you get the fun thing where, you know, you start talking about Plasse's law and how bubbles form and stuff like that. But again, we won't go into that.
Well, that's your area of fun and games, right? Is the leavener and how to, the different kinds and how to feed it and how to encourage it and how to baby
I'll
it.
Yeah, I'll talk about how sourdough can be. And I have a starter that I got when I first visited Maine looking for property in the fall of 1974. And I still have that starter going. So people ask me, tell me what I'm doing wrong. But and with that one, for instance, I tell people, you know, make pancakes with it every week and you won't waste any flour.
Well, I find starter very resilient. I mean, I can ignore my starter for weeks at a time and come back and it's just fine. Thank you so much.
One way to do it is to dehydrate a little bit on parchment paper or wax paper and then crumble it up when it's dry. Keep it in the freezer. It'll last for years that way.
There you go. There you go. So let's discuss the kneading conference because this is what got me so excited in the first place. The kneading conference coming up in July, and you can talk about the exact info, is a major educational effort of the Maine Grain Alliance. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So tell us about what the conference will be focusing on this year, who will want to attend, the benefits of attending. Is it just for people in the industry? Is it for home bakers? Is it? Tell us everything.
Yeah, no, this is so exciting, and it never gets old talking about the kneading conference because it's always new, and that's part of what has made it you know, something that we've been able to host for the last 19 years is that we are always having new voices, new ideas. And, you know, in many ways, the conference takes on a theme, sort of an unprogrammed theme. Every year, something sort of bubbles to the top that sort
no
of just
pun
is
intended.
Exactly. It's sort of the time, you know. One year it was sort of like the microbiome, like baking with your hands and how that influences things, and which was fascinating, you know. And that's sort of, you know, interesting with like Dusty's perspective, because he blends like the love of magic of baking with the science. And, you know, there's a lot of pieces that kind of come together in that. You know, there's so many different things. And sometimes that theme kind of is teased out when you're actually there. It's so unique, the conference, because it's the last week, always the last week of July. This year it's July 22nd through the 24th. It culminates in the main artisan bread fair, which is technically separate, but really very connected to the conference still. And the 3 days of events that are happening are span a tremendous amount of real estate. So there is something for everyone. If you've never baked before, you could go to the conference and attend something and you would find interesting throughout the entirety of that event. However, if you're also a seasoned baker or a, you know, professional baker who is really interested in something very specific and nuanced, you can find that as well. And so that is a really unique. It's the kneading conference also lends itself to these informal conversations. It's as much about the sitting at a picnic table with someone and learning about, you know, something that you're really interested in with them over a loaf of bread, or as it is sort of the more academic aspects of, you know, of learning the nuts and bolts of baking. So we activate the downtown of Skowhegan for 3 days, 4 days, really, dozens of different venues. The city is already alive, but it becomes even more alive as we bring in, you know, hundreds of people into the downtown to go and walk about in between these different places. Our keynote this year is a gentleman named David Bauer of Farm and Sparrow Farm, which is of in North Carolina. He is a little bit of everything, David, and has been somebody we've been excited to bring for a long time. He's a miller, he's a baker, seed collector. His journey began actually as an apprentice to an oven mason, a really famous one, Alan Scott. And so he worked, you know, in a variety of different sort of like grain and grain adjacent industries and professional career. He started All Souls Pizza, which was a tremendous hit. He has always focused on corn and buckwheat too, as big parts of what he is focused on, and heritage grains and how to connect farms. So, you know, there's a lot in common actually in North Carolina and Maine. We are simpatico in some ways, even though we have very different conditions. How we have been kind of growing in our education and our resources is there's like a kindred spirit there. And so he's exciting to come. He also has launched this really unique initiative called Bakers for Bakers, which mobilized over 100 different bakeries across the country to raise funds to purchase two mobile ovens, which were used to help feed people in Ukraine. And so, but we have 30 plus presenters spanning topics from pierogies to bagels to cakes, using whole grain in cakes, which is not something that is often or it's sort of like a new frontier for many people. We have a whole business track, so if you wanted to come to really like open up your books and think about how to partner with a co-packer, or you know, how to create an offering from your bakery that's going to find success from a marketing standpoint, you can do that. We have 40 farmers who will join us as part of our organic farmer track. Richard will be there leading one of a very popular experience every year, which is his Sunrise Grain Walk.
Yes, talk about that for a second, Richard. I saw that. That's so most conferences have sunrise yoga, so we have a sunrise grain walk. So talk about
everybody
that.
Gets together, that we meet somewhere where with this year it'll be up on the farm where I live, where I've got 27 different varieties growing. So we'll get there, meet people, will get a chance to go out and walk around through the grain and see all the different varieties. Yeah, that's been very popular. People really enjoy it. I'm always surprised that we get a big crowd so early in the morning.
Cool. Well, bakers are often early morning people, so they're about ready to go start their evening, you know, about 9 o'clock in the morning.
And bakers Dusty, and farmers have a lot in common in that respect.
They do.
Yeah.
So, Dusty, what are you teaching at the conference this year?
Well, I just mentioned it would be a workshop on leavening. And I'm working with Carrie Altiero. We'll bake, as I said, the same recipe in terms of flour, water, salt, but by every possible means of leavening, including several different overnight starters. And so you'll be able to, you know, you obviously can't do it start to finish. So what we have to do is talk about the methodology, but then have the breads ready to bake on time, right at the time of the conference. And the people first talk about, you know, everything. Like I say, you know, fun stuff like what happens if you mix dough in a vacuum and things like that. You know, we go into a lot of the underlying science as well as the practical levels.
Dough in the space station.
Plan ahead. When I bake, I go out the night before and I do all my starters, whether they're sourdough or yeast-based. And then you have to modulate the amount of yeast so you get the right level of or starter. So you get the right, and then you use those starters in the morning for baking.
So how do you organize it, Tristan, with the oven needs? Yeah. And I mean, to me, that would be mind-boggling.
So, yeah, it is tricky. But it also is part of what makes it kind of special. You know, it's like this, everyone's in it together. They're not always in professional bakeries, but you're with some of the most, literally the most skilled bakers in the entire country. You know, so we'll have our wood fired oven going. Martin Phillip from King Arthur, for example, he's a new pizza book coming out. He'll be teaching a pizza class. We'll have the area food businesses that are in the downtown lend us their kitchens. So we'll be activating those spaces, but also church catering kitchens, also warehouses that we turn into bakeries. We are everywhere throughout the downtown. And it is really fun because Skowhegan itself has been transformed by food. You know, you have Main Grains in the downtown and an old, retrofitted jailhouse, which now also has the Miller's Table Cafe making tons of delicious things from the things that are being milled at the grist mill. You have another mill building that's been transformed downtown where a lot of our activity will take place. The Skowhegan, which was the spinning mill at one point. There's a German beer garden serving grain-based products and main craft beverage. You've got the Bankery downtown, which is one of our favorite places. The Main Meal creating hot, delicious frozen pastas and other grain-based products. So, you know, there's just a lot to do to get ready for it, but it is, once it's there, we'll welcome people from all over the country. We have, you know, usually 20 plus states represented there, and our presenters are really some of the greatest bakers in the country. It's remarkable that we are lucky enough to be able to host something like this in Maine, and it culminates in that Maine Artisan Bread Fair on the last Saturday of July, which will have hopefully 3,000 to 4,000 people joining us for about 70 different vendors. And we have live music. We have a children's section. We've got pizza that we're making on our ovens. We're selling bread that was created at the Kneading Conference. So if you can't make it to the conference itself, you can come to the fair. You can still take workshops. We have 4 different workshops going on during that day.
How can our Creative Maine listeners participate in the conference or the fair or other workshops that you hold during the year, or find the products of your various members? Give us the deets.
Yeah, the deets. You can head to kneadingconference.com. Again, KNEADING. And on our site, you can check out our full schedule, 30-something workshops. You can register for the event. It includes delicious meals. We'll have, you know, 2 lunches, 2 breakfasts, a dinner. You can also register for a number of free things or a keynote-only ticket if you can only make it to the keynote. We're doing a buyer seller panel and a grain social on that Thursday, July 23rd, which is free for anyone to come. On the Friday of July 24th, we are also likely to do a bread, beer, and cheese tasting event at the Beer Garden in Skowhegan. But our events are ongoing all the time. We have a lot of free events that are happening. We have everything from grain expert office hours to marketing webinars about food-based businesses and grain-based businesses. A lot of field visits. We'll be visiting farms, processors. As you mentioned, Hiwa, we just were there.
So give us your URL.
So kneadingconference.com, you'll find we have a grain education event page that has all of those there. All the dates are listed. We'll have lots of things happening. Thursday, June 25th is the Portland Bread Crawl.
Wow, so there's something for everybody in
Something for
your
everybody.
annual lineup. Thank you so much, everyone, for participating in this discussion. It's been very interesting, quite wonderful. It revs me up for baking and all the wonderful things that we have going here in Maine that I think a lot of people don't even know about. Go to kneadingconference.com.
Dot com.
And if you want to find Tristan to pick his brain, it's what is it, Tristan at Maine Grain Alliance?
Yes, Tristan at MaineGrainAlliance.com, and happy to answer any questions. And we hope to see you all across Maine in the next couple of months.
Thank you so much, Tristan, Richard, and Dusty. It's been a true pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you so much to my knowledgeable guests, Tristan Noyes, Dusty Dowse, and Richard Roberts. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on WERU.org for another eclectic episode on Thursday, July 16th at 4 p.m., when we will learn about buskers and their place in the creative landscape of Maine. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson, wishing you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.